I would like to apologize in advance for whoever uses this microphone next.
My microphone smells like beard and hot dog.
Which is the name of our Jonathan Colton cover band.
And with that, we're underway. I'm going to turn it over to the gentleman in the front of the room.
Let's see. Let's see if... Thank you, Charlie Brown's teacher. Let's see if I can make the magical audio work. Are you ready, Storm?
No. Let's go ahead. This is no more formal than it normally would be.
How, very briefly before we start, how many of you are have listened to our podcast before?
Wow!
And how many of you are new to it? And how many are just here because Jonathan Colton is here? That's
great. One. Just gonna make a little mark.
All right, now we know how many of the inside jokes we should use or not. That's just good.
We apologize in advance to the children up front. Let's see if we can make this go.
So we are recording this as a regular podcast, so we have sort of a beginning. It's very informal. We've never done it in front of a live crowd before, but being
informal, will be obvious very quickly.
What we're trying to say is we don't care what happens.
Okay.
Are we ready?
From all towns in Stormtown.
In Atlanta.
It's Colin Storm talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
Which will be more like an hour.
Everybody dance. Like Muppets.
I'm not going to dance like a Muppet. Or am I?
Can I has live audience?
Nerds! I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, today it is Friday, September 2nd, 2011, and we are at Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia.
And I have absolutely no clue what number show this is, but we'll fix that in post. As you may have noticed, listening at home, this is a live show, the first ever live Paul and Storm podcast.
We do not know what is going to happen.
Because we are phenomenally ill-prepared. For example, I don't believe we know how many minions are currently in the Minion Brigade.
A heck of a lot. Somewhere north of 400.
Make some noise. How many of you are minions in the Minion Brigade?
Find those people after the podcast. And sign up if you are listening, paulandstorm.com, to find out more about that. What we did prepare today, we have assembled ourselves a Jonathan Colton.
Jonathan Colton, you are allowed to speak now.
Oh, thank you. Hello, everybody.
So, this being a live audience and us being up here, stalwart pals, all three of us, let's open things up a little bit to the audience first. Do you want to hear? What are the origin story? Do you want to hear the alternate universe story? Do you want to just talk about Jonathan's new album like the rest of us?
That's what I want to talk about.
Sing Eddie Prager. Jonathan Colton's new album in an alternate universe.
Ooh, Jonathan Colton's new album in an alternate universe. You know, actually, it sort of is an alternate universe. It's you, but it's maybe a you that people have not known was you or may have suspected was you.
In other words, where are the goddamn monkeys?
First of all, Storm, that's a terrific segue.
Thank you.
Second of all, yeah, it is, you know, in many ways it feels the same, and in many ways it feels different. I'm not sure. It's a little bit of both. I like it, though. I'm very happy with it.
I have listened to it literally dozens of times at this point. I find it's something that I listen start to end. It feels like you, intentionally or not, put a lot of thought into the songs, perhaps, and not only that, but their order.
As opposed to usually.
Right.
The crap you churn like, out.
I'm just phone it in.
Right.
Yeah. I did put a lot of thought into these songs. Of course, you know, prior to this album, I was doing, you know, the last thing, big thing I did was Thing a Week, and that was a song every week, and it was like, it didn't have any, you know, large-scale coherence to it. And so it was a very different experience to just write and write and write and write and not publish and write and write and write and still not publish. It was very weird. All these songs sort of like amassing themselves in this little pen waiting to be let out. And over the course of that, yeah, I think the they did sort of maybe just from happening all, you know, during that period of time and being around one another in that pen, they sort of took on a similar cast. It feels to me very much like a whole thing.
Was there a point at which you sort of, it might have felt weird to you to be writing songs and not get the feedback, at which you sort of became comfortable, and was there a change in your songwriting at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I think early, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there was a change in my songwriting as I ran out of ideas, which is the same thing I... It was not a joke. The same thing that happened to me in Thing a Week, which was, you know, I was writing and had some easy access to ideas that were ready to go, and then once they were gone, it was kind of like, oh, wow, okay, now I have to write. And then I would write those, and I'd be like, oh, my God, I have to write more songs. I have nothing left. And that's where it always changed, because it sort of started to come from some other place, which is always kind of fun.
Now, I was going to ask if that sort of informed... Well, you're going to get asked this question a whole bunch of times, as you probably already have been, especially as people continue to purchase the album, which just came out. Yay!
And which is a Pollen Storm recommends with a star and a bullet and a whatever you want.
And a smiley face.
Smiley face.
But, you know, as is obvious, and it's not like you didn't know it, but, you know, you certainly became well-known to a great swath of your fan base through either, for lack of a better term, nerd-oriented or almost novelty-ish songs, and also, again, not that Still Alive is a novelty song, but it is certainly a niche genre-type song that especially appeals to a certain fan base. And this new album, that type of songwriting is largely absent. And so let's get some of the obvious questions out of the way. How much of that was a conscious decision? How much of that was just sort of where you are, your headspace was at right now? And do you expect to have to deal with much feedback? And how do you respond to such feedback, like, where are my monkeys?
The way I have always approached writing songs is that it's best when you write a song that you really want to write. The trick is figuring out what it is that you really want to write on a case by case basis. So, you know, it is true that the stuff that I'm most known for is definitely the nerd oriented stuff, the niche stuff, the novelty stuff, the funny stuff. But I think that's more a testament to how powerful the niche is than it is to me in general, because in among those, I mean, if you look at Thing a Week and all the stuff that came before, you know, there was definitely some nerdy stuff in there. There's also some pop culture stuff in there. There's also some pretty serious stuff in there. It just so happens that the serious stuff doesn't really move quite as well as the funny stuff and the nerdy stuff, because I don't know, nerds is crazy. Nerds is
nerds be crazy.
Nerds
gentlemen.
Be crazy.
New T-shirt. If I can ask you, like, with your music up to this point, it seems like a lot of the songs are sort of puzzles that you write. Like, I Crush Everything, where you're listening and you think, oh, this is kind of a sweet, sensitive song. And then you realize at a certain point, oh, it's about a giant squid. And that might be what part of what sort of where people would categorize you in the novelty category. On Artificial Heart, it seems like, I don't know if this was conscious or not, and would like to know, that you've sort of traded in puzzles for mysteries, where you set a scene, and it's still very quirky, but sometimes you can't fix on exactly what it's about, and it's open for interpretation, and after you listen to the song, you find yourself sort of playing a game with it. Like, the song doesn't really end in your mind.
Right.
And then you rip the mask off the monster, and it's old man McGillicuddy who just wanted to get the house.
Oh, it's another real estate scam. I see. Thanks, Scooby-Doo. I know what you mean about mysteries. And I was a bit of a conscious decision. I mean, I've always been a huge fan of mystery songs. You know, I ever since I was a kid, I really gravitated to the songs that you couldn't quite figure out what they were about. You know, you knew, but you didn't really know the whole story. You felt like you were only being given part of the story.
Example.
Sure. Famous Blue Raincoat by Leonard Cohen is one of my favorite examples of this kind of song, and it's if you're not familiar with
it. Sing
it.
Come on, Monkey Man.
That's two. If you're not familiar with it, it's a letter. It's the text of a letter that somebody is writing to a friend, an old friend, sort of turned enemy. There's some sort of love triangle involved. It's very mysterious and spooky and unclear what happened because it's a private conversation between him and this other person. And you are not meant to know the entirety of the story, but it is so, I find it so tantalizing, and I continue to, over the years, turn it over in my head and try to figure out what that backstory is. And I just love that a song can do that, can stick in your brain like that. So, I experimented quite a bit with being a little more mysterious. And of course, as you guys know, you know, when you're approaching a song, you know, being indirect about it is sometimes a better way of approaching a thing. And so you're always sort of struggling between how directly am I going to talk about this thing, or am I going to sort of approach it from the side? And then it becomes more interesting.
Another question I have for you is, even through all of the novelty songs or, you know, all of your songwriting to date, a great majority of it seems to... more of them tell stories as opposed to just describe an emotion or a feeling or just a setting. And that continues even on this new album, even if it's not about zombies or what have you. You still seem to be telling a lot of
stories. They could
stories.
Be about zombies.
Could be, yeah. Just,
oh, yeah, they're all about zombies.
Implied zombies. But do you personally prefer, from a listening standpoint, do you tend to prefer story-oriented songs versus just, you know, say a straight-ahead Girl, I Love You type song, and or do you prefer to write story-ish songs?
I don't mind listening to a Girl, I Love You song. I kind of like a Girl, I Love You song. There's something really great about just a pure pop thing that's uncomplicated by stories about giant squids or... constructions, you know, constructing a thing where it's a letter or a memo written by a zombie or whatever, you know. Sometimes it's nice to just listen to a song that's about driving around in a car and feeling awesome. but as a songwriter, I actually struggle with that a lot. I can't seem to write a song like that. I would love to write a song like that.
You ever tried and just failed miserably?
Oh, yeah.
Are there
every time
in the catalog you'll never perform?
Well, I never get very far. Every time I try to write a song, I'm like, all right, here's the one that's just going to be, this is just going to be about happy feelings, you know. Well, that song, Blue Sunny Day, you know, which is about a vampire who commits suicide.
Didn't start out that way?
No! And really, the line, Blue Sunny Day, I was like, oh, here it is. This is the time that I'm going to... That's a perfectly... Who could screw up that line, you know? Who could twist that to some nefarious purpose? And then, as I was writing it, I was like, it's kind of boring. It's kind of boring. What blue... Blue in what way? Oh, I know sad. Oh, I know vampire. So,
well, on Artificial Heart, my stealth favorite song, if you listen to the podcast, the concept is maybe not the one that everybody is going to love so much, but that you feel is, yeah, I can't wait to hear that one.
The unexpected favorite.
Unexpected favorite for me is Sucker Punch. It is 2 minutes of adrenaline-fueled awesome rock awesomeness. I sort of feel like that's very close to being a straight-ahead song. There's obviously a story there, and you don't know exactly what's going on, but the chorus is so strong that you can find yourself flying down the road at 100 miles an hour just screaming it out there.
Oh, wow. That sounds awesome. I'm glad I wasn't in the car with you, though.
You already know you don't want to be in the car when I'm driving. Was that an attempt to write a straight-ahead rock song?
Yeah, I think so. You know, because it was the album was produced by John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants, and the process involved me, you know, he would say, Colton, it's Landsberg. I need six songs by Friday.
Apparently, he was a 1940s newspaper editor.
Right. He's chomping on a cigar, and he has a phone in each hand, you know, an old-fashioned rotary phone in each hand.
Colton, give me 600 words on the stock market by 4 o'clock and a dozen pictures of Spider-Man.
And I would write songs and give them to him, and he would say, "Yeah, you know, this is good. This could be improved. And then he would say, "Now go back and do this kind of song. Write a duet for Suzanne Vega, or write a thing that confuses me." He kept saying that. That was when, write a song that confuses me, which is like a great challenge.
Is John Flansburgh easily confused?
Apparently you haven't listened to enough They Might Be Giants back catalog.
Or is it like The Princess and the Pea, where he's become so desensitized to being confused?
Right. And you know, he at some point, I had given him a bunch of songs, and he was like, "So, you know, there's some great songs here, but you should know that right now it's coming across as very dark and sad."
He knew who you were, did
well,
he not?
I know. I'm like, well... I played you that song about the vampire who committed suicide, right? Plans? You got that, right?
By the way, and I'd like to interject here, speaking of stealth favorites and sad and dark, is my favorite song on your album is Nobody Loves You Like Me, which may be the 2.5 saddest minutes of music outside of Leader of the Pack or Patches
yet,
that exists.
Yet still a mystery.
Like, still a mystery, I listen to that song and I just want to... like. Oh, Colt needs a hug.
I know, it's weird. I am a happy person, is the thing.
I don't think you are.
Well, that's three. I am a generally very happy person. I, like many other people, I get sad sometimes when I think about certain things, but it's not like I'm walking around all depressed all the time. So I don't know why I continue to write sad songs. It's just more interesting to me than happy songs. I mean that Sucker Punch was definitely an attempt to be as freewheeling as possible. At least that guy's not sad, right? He's not
yet.
Sad. Not yet. He will be. He will be later. And Nobody Loves You Like Me is a terribly, terribly sad song that came from a dark place that I don't even really understand. But I do want to emphasize, these songs are not about me. They are certainly based on experiences and things in my head and people I know and all that stuff. But I don't want any rumors to get started.
Now, speaking of John Flansburgh and working with a producer, obviously a lot of your music is fully rock produced. Did you find it was a big difference or a relief or a challenge or all of it to give up some of that control? Or did you find that it was freeing, that you could just concentrate on the songwriting?
Yeah, I when I agreed to do it, when Flansburgh first asked me if I wanted to do it, and I said yes, I sort of made a deal with myself that I was going to say yes to a lot of things, and that I was really going to give up control of a lot of things, because I, having done everything, I mean, you guys are at least a duo, right? You can sort of trade off.
At least.
I should say, at least you guys are a duo. You can trade off on things. You can run things by each other. You collaborate.
Yeah.
And I've been, all these years, I've been doing it just me rattling around inside my own head and inside my own tiny studio. So it's like you start to go a little crazy. You don't know what, mm-hmm. you don't know what's true anymore. You don't know what's good anymore.
You're like the songwriting Mad Max just driving across the wasteland.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, I part of this was I really wanted to open up the process in a lot of different ways. And that meant, you know, having somebody else, i.e. John Flansburgh, tell me what was bad about my songwriting, which was not an easy thing to do because I'm a huge fan of him and They Might Be Giants. And I also feel like I'm a pretty good songwriter. So I'd give him a song and be like, this line is kind of crappy. And I'd be like, shut up, you're crappy. But of course, he was right. He was always right. And I think it really strengthened the songwriting to have somebody do some editing and tweaking. And then, you know, we would go into the... I would give the song to the band to learn, and they would like make up their own parts, and we'd go into the rehearsal studio and just try stuff out until we got something that sounded good, and then we'd go into the studio, and Flansburgh would say, that's all wrong, you got to do it this way. So it was this really, they evolved, and it was great. It was great to watch, and it was very freeing to not have to. I'll be very frank with you, to not have to be responsible for every detail in the song, and also to have other people who are great at doing these other things finally doing those things instead of me trying to fake a 12-part trombone thing, you know?
That was a disaster during Thing of the Week. Given Flansburgh's involvement, though, when you listen to the album, except for the parts with 12 trombones, Artificial Heart definitely comes across as Jonathan Coulton all the same, so obviously it wasn't super heavy-handed.
No, and I expected a lot more... I expected it to come out sounding a lot more They Might Be Giants-y, I think, which means...
A lot more wandering saxophone solos.
Yeah, sure. 8 bars of saxophones doing whatever they want. Yeah. Sort of a classic middle section in They Might Be Giants songs. I really expected a lot more weird stuff to come out of it. And I think we both did. I think he did, too, but... I don't know. I don't know if it was the songs I was writing or just this groove we got into where it was just the songs just seemed to suggest a kind of it was, you know, a nice straight ahead, like this is a rock band playing a song kind of thing for the most part. And that was really fun because that's another thing that's new, completely new to my experience. So.
Paul, you have an eye on the Twitter feed? Or
I have an
questions?
Eye on the Twitter feed. Here's a good one that'll be fun to address in front of an audience.
That's four. I already know this is going to be four, so go ahead.
Teletheus asks, regarding audience responses, how far is too far? When does it go from awesome to awful? How many of you have never seen us perform live before? Okay, so most of... The internet accounts, sure.
Counts-ish, yes.
Those of you who've seen us live know full well that Storm... Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Storm and I...
Let's find out right now where it crosses the line.
We will know you've been very well-mannered to this point.
Well, it's because we're talking about all my depressing songs.
But Storm and I, you know, we encourage audience response and we kind of thrive on it, partly because we haven't written too many new songs lately, so we got to do something to keep it interesting for everybody, right? let's just formally address the topic. Generally, you know, we when we're on stage and we're playing with the audience and they're shouting at us and we're shouting at them, for the most part, we are playing it up and having a good time. And I especially will take the role of antagonist and wagging my finger and cursing at whoever keeps shouting. Most people with common sense can kind of tell when we're done, which usually is the point where we stop responding to said person who has gone, woo, for the 9th time. The problem is most of the people that have gone, woo, for the 9th time aren't the kind of people that pick up on those type of social cues and shut the hell up. So this is where, personally at least, I would like to recruit you, our audiences. If you are in a concert and sitting near that person.
Oh, I've got it. I've got an idea.
Well, go ahead. I was going to say we give some sort of signal.
Yes. So just very quietly start chanting, shame, shame, shame. Shame. And let it build.
And the trigger for starting that chant is at some point we will just work into the conversation the word fluffernutter. If on stage you ever hear the word fluffernutter come out of our mouths, you know that's your guy's turn.
It's a code red.
Yeah, it's a code red. So we can't handle this from the stage anymore. So, it's Storm, you dig the whole Fluffernutter sandwich thing?
I was never a Fluffernutter. I did not have fluff until I was, I think.
Wait, is that a signal?
There it is. Now, important to this is to identifying the perpetrator.
The culprit.
Right.
We'll just point. I'll walk over to him and beat him on the head.
I like that. It's very zombie mob-like. Kindly do not remove the organs from the person who is being shamed.
All we want to do is mete out shame. That's for free. That's for free.
Yeah. Okay, we've taken a question from the Netherwebs. Does anybody have a question for us, all of us, for Jonathan, about artificial heart?
There was the first hand I saw right over here, right next to the microphone, so that'll work. Say your question nice and loud.
Okay.
Of course, the microphone has to be on, too.
I can just say it really
loud. Oh, it's on. It's on.
We are recording.
Oh, wow.
There you are.
One, I'm super excited that y'all are coming to your very first Dragon Con. I hope y'all are having a good time.
Actually, Storm and I were at one 3 years ago, but that was when nobody knew who the hell we were, so you're excused.
We're all so young.
Oh, thank you.
Paul's fishing for sympathy.
Hey, no.
Hey.
Nobody said the code word.
Oh, man.
We just unleashed a goddamn dragon.
Please go ahead.
So I actually have two questions. One being, where are y'all selling your merch? Because I would love to.
We love you.
You should.
Boy, that's a good question. It'd be great if we knew the answer. Famous Tracy knows the answer in the back. Are we in the Marriott?
In the Marriott, down the hall from Exhibit Hall 1.
In the Marriott,
down the hall from Exhibit 1. There's pieces of paper on the table to tell you where to go. And we're planning, we actually just talked about this. We expect, neither of us is going to have terribly much time tomorrow, Saturday, to sell merch. So we're planning on making Sunday mega merch day for us. We'll plan to be there most of the day.
Yeah, on Sunday.
Hopefully, most or all of you will be around still on Sunday. So
for our listeners, you can always find our merchandise at paulandstorm.com.
Well, I'm super excited about Sunday. I know you guys have a show tonight. And you can see DragonCon obviously loves you, but I don't know.
Can I say, with a mouthful of chips, how awesome it is that we filled up this room? Thank you guys for showing up. They turned people away? Yeah,
wow.
Fuck those guys.
But... since I know I'm going to be way too drunk to leave DragonCon by 5. Are you guys going to be here doing a show any other time to this weekend?
Yes. Well, tomorrow night.
Yeah, Saturday night at 8:30 in Centennial Ballroom?
It's called Gonzaru, if you look it up. Put together by Ken Plume. It's going to be an amazing show with tons of surprise guests, including
at least several.
But we're not surprises anymore.
Yeah, but that's us and Jonathan and a bunch of friends, including Molly Lewis, who's sitting in the back of the room. Hi, Molly!
Oh, there's Molly.
Take another question.
Raise your hand. Raise your hand, and I will come to you. Maybe. This is very meta right here.
For those in the listening audience, there is somebody who's shown up, which would seem to be a Jonathan Colton Muppet.
And a very Muppety Muppet, in fact.
That's weird.
What, that there's a guy in the audience with his hand up your ass?
Don't take offense, puppet. It's great. It's great. It's just, how would you feel if there was a puppet of you?
That would be super meta if the Jonathan Colton Muppet
had its own Muppet up its head.
It's turtles all the way down.
Jonathan, I haven't read a lot about you, so if it's out there, I missed it. I know that the Might Be Giants guy is directing you, but who influenced you most as a musician?
Oh, boy.
That's five.
Who influenced me most? I mean, a lot of people. When I was a kid, when I crossed over into that point where you're old enough to have your own hi-fi system and decide which music you're going to listen to, I listened for about 5 years exclusively to Billy Joel and the Beatles.
Yes.
So it would be hard to not cite them as influences. But, you know, so many people, Loudon Wainwright III, I'm a big fan of him. I have, you know, his songwriting is so, you want to talk about depressing songs. That guy gets dark. You know, he's dark and funny at the same time. And that's, you know, I think that's a big part of where I got that. They Might Be Giants have been a huge influence, just in so many ways. Just basically, they're the band that asked the question, why not? You know, in everything that they do, in performing and recording and writing. Who else? T.J. Paul and Storm, of course.
Of course.
Very influential band.
I mean, I would really say that's the core of it for me.
Got a question down.
Was there someone else? Oh. Yeah, that was here. Let's. All right, hands across America. Pastor.
When is this at? There we go. When you guys write, do you guys listen to music? And if you do, what do you listen to?
Pretty broad. Right now, I've been listening. There have been a number of great releases.
Like Jonathan Colton's Artificial Heart?
Yeah, seriously. That is on...
That was a plug for you, by the way.
You guys.
But I've been mixing that up with They Might Be Giants' latest, Join Us, which I'm loving very much. There is a band called Tally Hall, who has a fairly recent album called Good and Evil. It's all broadly power pop. But
Fountains of Wayne is real good. Their latest is excellent.
Yeah, quite terrific. Sky Full of Holes, that is called. And, yeah, just anything that is catchy, melodic, but has a brain behind it and a little bit of mystery.
Was the question, do we listen to music while we write? Or I personally can't listen to any. I can't have the TV going or music in the back. I've never been a music in the background kind of guy. Actually, let me take a moment to rant. How many of you out there are the kind of people who, when you throw a party, have to have, like, music? There's a party at your house, have to have music playing in the background, like, way too goddamn loudly.
Oh, wait a minute. That's not a real question. Now you're just mad.
Yeah. I did say I was going to rant. I have never been a music in the background kind of guy. I mean, I love music, but I don't need it going every hour of my day. But especially when writing, I kind of... It's not like I need to hole up in a dark room. I actually write generally in my jammies on my laptop on my couch with my feet up. And that's more info than you really needed to know.
I'll say for songwriting, definitely not. Like if you're trying to sort of tune in the signal that you have, and it might be weak at first, especially you don't want, you know, John Flansburgh's voice suddenly coming at you and suddenly it takes you off course, for example. But for other types of writing, yes. Like if writing, you know, an essay or fiction or something, it can sort of jolt you a little bit because it's not competing with what you're doing. It might add to it.
I used to, when I had a software job, I used to just listen to music all day and while I worked, and that was the sort of greatest thing. The most perfect day at the software job was a day where I would show up, get some coffee, sit at my desk, like set up a stack of CDs, just start cracking open some code and just write and listen to music and nobody would bother me. And it was like the greatest, right? I know.
Did you have a go-to song or album or artist that would really get your programming mojo going?
You know
what's your coding soundtrack?
Well, all the other developers, you know, we would swap CDs with each other. So I got to listen to a lot of stuff that I wouldn't otherwise listen to. And the one that really sticks out for me was this a Chemical Brothers album, which I don't remember the name of right now. And I don't even really like that kind of music.
Sure.
But I don't even know what kind of music is it. I'm afraid to even say a word in case I'm embarrassed about being wrong.
Country?
It's electronica.
Thumpity thumpity.
But it's like a special branch of electronica called...
Nerd thumpity thumpity.
Nerd trance snompa hop. I don't know. But
Four trance.
Yeah, four trance.
That's one.
But it had no words to distract me, and it had some really bumping beats.
All right.
Next question. Hands. Thank you.
I'm picturing DJ Jonathan Colton. Okay, this next one's by the Chemical Brothers. It's got some bumping beats for you.
I'm trying to talk how the kids talk.
Yeah. This is for all of you. You're all kind of appreciated by the geek subculture.
Kind of.
I hedge. But I was curious to what extent you guys are into fantasy and sci-fi in other media, and what some authors or shows or movies that, you know, are kind of touchstones for you would be.
Big time. On and off. Definitely growing up and in through high school, avid reader of science fiction and fantasy. Really took a break from it. It sort of seemed like you reach an overload point and you're doing other things. Have come back to it a ton in recent years. John Scalzi, friend of ours who... Yes.
More there he is right there.
John Scalzi, please. obviously, you can't see this on the radios, but I'm wearing a shirt influenced by George R.R. Martin and the Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire. We talked about that.
I am partway through right now Patrick Rothfuss's The Name of the Wind, which is excellent. I've always been sort of more of a pretender to the throne. I was never super into sci-fi or gaming. I was not averse to it, but I never did terribly much. Like, really, the only sci-fi book I read before the age of about 22 was the Star Wars adaptation by, was it Alan Dean Foster? I came a little late to the game.
Fluffernutter.
Yeah, that's right. Bring it.
Wow, that shit works.
Jonathan, how about you? Were you
I just like Storm. I took a long break from it for some reason. I don't know why. Like I had Omni magazine when I was a kid.
Yeah, sure.
And I kept
you only
them.
Read it for the articles though.
I had a big stack of them, and I would go back and read all the science fiction stories in there. And I sort of tore through a bunch of sci-fi when I was a teenager, and then I don't know why I stopped.
Because you grew up,
I guess. got normal, I guess. And then I've recently come back to it in recent years. I'm just going to say the same thing you did, Scalzi, in Game of Thrones. I just read Ready Player One, which was really great. I thought
Ernie Klein.
Yep, yeah, and
Neil Gaiman.
Neil Gaiman, obviously, yeah. Sure.
Neil Stevenson, you got me on him.
Oh, Neil Stevenson,
big
good
time.
God.
Easy, easy read, too. Like, that's Neil, a light bathroom reading. Pop open Anathem. Oh, it's a breeze.
Yeah, Anathem was great. That's one of my favorite books from the last, like, 10 years.
Yeah, if you want a book that you can disappear into and not
literally because it's so damn huge. Yeah.
Keep yourself warm for a year under that book. Anything on the Twitter feed or other questions?
Oh, I guess I should look another question.
Because we're out of ideas.
One over here, one over there.
Sing Eddie Prager.
Yeah, that'll
not
happen.
A question, sir.
All right, this is for all three of you. I know this is quasi first time at Dragon Con, but in all your tours and different cons or whatever, what is the most horrifying thing that you have witnessed so far?
At a con or just in general?
In general.
Okay. Horrifying.
If it was just going to be at a con, we'd have to plead the fifth.
Well, I'm going to go with something I saw earlier today. I was sitting in a coffee shop, not in the con itself, and this is a bit of a cop-out, but sitting there, and there was a civilian in the room.
A normal?
Yes. And they were watching the folks coming and going in costume, and this guy turns to his wife and says, "Huh, wow, all these people in spacesuits." Like, no matter what went by, it was a spacesuit.
This is unrelated to your question, sir, but semi-related to your story. So I will tell it anyway. One time...
Band camp?
Yeah. I went to see a movie called 12 Monkeys many years ago.
That's
remember that movie?
Yeah.
And we were coming out of the movie, and this old woman behind us who had gone to the movie with a friend of hers turned to her friend and said, "With a name like 12 Monkeys, you'd think it'd be funnier." Ah, you monkeys! Ah, get out of here, you monkeys!
All right, we're going to start a Kickstarter to get that movie made.
12 wacky 12 monkeys.
12 actual monkeys.
In one apartment building.
Jonathan Colton is a singer-songwriter trying to write a serious album when his uncle sends him 12 monkeys.
Oh,
cue a Third Eye Blind song to a montage.
Walking on sunshine.
Paul, do you have any horrifying experiences you'd like to share or things that did not involve monkeys that you wish had?
I can't beat the 12 monkeys story, I don't think. Oh, man.
It's a hard question. People ask that. Frequent question is like, what's the worst thing that ever happened to you on the road?
Yes.
And it's like, nothing real bad has ever happened.
Yeah. Actually, someone asked on the Twitters earlier. I've scribbled in my own handwriting, which is illegible, so I can't tell you who it was. Shane Roberts wanted to know about our Canadian border incident.
Well, that was pretty terrible.
Somebody forgot his passport.
So this will serve. I guess aside just from saying it was horrible, there's not a lot to tell.
Is that all we're going to say about it?
That's it. That is why you don't ask us what horrible things happen on the road. We expel them from our brains.
Right. This wasn't at a con. And this is a, I think I've told this story before, but this is a great story that turns into a horrifying story. This was pre-Jonathan Colton days. Storm and I, in the middle of a December night in, I think it was Madison, Wisconsin, rescued a kitten. Oh, okay. Let me tell the story. It's not so off. So it's like 1 a.m. and we pull into our hotel parking lot and there's a light dusting of snow on the ground as we get out of our car. And we hear this little meow. Meow, and lo and behold, there's a little kitten hiding underneath the tire of the car next to us, and we coax it out and we bring it in with us. And the woman working behind the desk said she had a friend who worked at the local ASPCA and would be happy to take the kitten in the morning when she got off shift. So we kept the kitten in our room that night, and of course, being the cat people that we are, battled to see who the cat would sleep with.
And also who we get to feed the cat. You can't rescue a cat and not feed it.
So we had, we borrowed a little. I think we got some milk or some cream from somewhere. And we had a leftover pizza. And Storm was feeding it little bits of ham from the pizza.
Oh, it was so cute. We named him Thurman Merman.
Because we just, Bad Santa, it was the year Bad Santa, or the year after Bad Santa had come out. So we got this, adorable look. We got a little box. We made a little, shredded some newspaper for it to do its business in, and fell asleep.
We fell asleep. The kitten was a little busy.
We woke up that next morning to discover that, when a stray cat has not eaten for a long time and then eats a whole lot
milk and ham,
it goes through their system really fast.
Perhaps they're not accustomed to using a litter box.
And we discovered the dark downside of encouraging the cat to sleep with us when we discovered, the cat had crapped all over the room, including on our pillows. So much for aww. Bad Thurman.
So that's probably the worst thing that's ever happened to us.
It was kind of like, the Godfather when he wakes up to the dog. Just keep on pulling back.
Was it worse than that time that I pooped on your pillows?
That was kind of adorable.
Yeah.
You just had this little, you had such a grin on you. You were so proud.
I'm a rascal.
And it smelled like mangoes, which was.
That's true. My poop smells like mangoes. I don't even eat mangoes. How? Put it in the Wikipedia, people. I beg you.
It's already there.
how much time do we have?
We got about 15-ish minutes left.
Okay.
Any other question? One over here. And that's right. You had a question earlier, and we ignored you. Unless it was about poop, in which case we pretty much covered it.
He sat down, people listening at home.
Okay, hi. So I know at some point in early 2012, yet to be determined, They Might Be Giants, are coming back to Atlanta. And I'm wondering, Joko, if you will be opening for them. And in addition, if Paul and Storm and Molly Lewis could also get in on that concert, I will pay a lot of money to
get in
come
on that sweet,
it.
Sweet Giants action, Jonathan. Can you pull some strings?
Quite honestly, I don't know yet because I don't even know. I don't know their schedule or my schedule, so it's hard to predict. If it works out, I would love to do it. I mean, the it's really fun touring with them. People have asked me, like, so now that you're opening for They Might Be Giants, is Paul and Storm going to open for you when you do that? And they clearly do not understand how it works in this business. No, there's really only room for one opener at something as
there can be only one.
It's not a Katamari where it just continues to right. accrete acts.
They're not doing a string of like 7 hour Woodstocks. I know.
Well, now so when they come down and play, just start shaming them.
So do you find, like, even early on, when we were in the van touring about, you talked about how big an influence They Might Be Giants were on you. Do you, in the process of working with John Flansburgh, sort of step back every once in a while and go, holy shit?
Yeah, constantly. Sure. Yeah, it's crazy.
Especially when you lose money at poker to them. And it's a bit more of a, holy shit!
Yeah. Well, it's a very strange... I mean, so many aspects of this life are so bizarre. And you're like, oh my God, I'm having dinner with my friend Will Wheaton. How did that happen? You know, I still geek out about the things that I used to geek out about. It's just that... you know, now sometimes they're in my actual circle of friends, and it's such a strange.
Well, that's not so hard with Google Plus anymore.
That's a good point.
Friends in your circle. Yeah, being I'll put all these people in my circle right now.
Yeah, being a musician is not all about having kittens poop on your head.
That's the quote of the weekend, ladies and gentlemen. Put that on a shirt. It's mostly about kitten poop. I have a couple of battles.
Sure.
This is another aspect of our podcast we do every so often, where we posit potential battles and who would win. Here's one for you two to consider. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles versus the Power Rangers. The battle is in a quilting bee. Who would finish a quilt quicker and who would make a better quilt?
Power Rangers.
Yeah, obviously Power Rangers.
Because they work better as a team when at all times.
Well, and also with the thumbs.
Yeah, that's true.
It helps. I mean, I don't see how...
They're a team of thumbs. That's why.
Someone, I don't have it in front of me, but this isn't a battle, but this is a question someone has asked. Cheetos, with dip or without dip?
Without dip.
What, Cheetos? Who? Yeah. What kind of a Cheetos. Monster would dip a Cheeto?
Maybe if they devise some sort of, like, side packet of powder that you could dip it into.
Some processed artificial powder that tastes nothing extra. Like what it alleges.
No, I was thinking just extra Cheetos power, but I like that.
You ever get the bonus thing in the bag that's just a huge ball of flavor powder? And you're like, oh boy, this is going to be delicious. And you put it in your mouth and you eat it, and it's the most disgusting thing you've ever had in your mouth.
So, pro tip, open your bags of flavored chips from the bottom.
Why is that, Storm?
Because all the goodness is at the bottom. And when you open it, it'll
be at
the top.
Because of gravity.
That's science, my friends.
Any other questions from the audience?
Yes, over here.
You guys brought up a very good point, talking about Woodstock. When is Woodstock coming to anywhere in the Southeast? And why wasn't it around now?
Great question.
Will is here. You guys are here. Phil Plate is here. Jonathan's here. I'm just saying.
We made a decision early on when we first started it that to be an actual Woodstock, it would need to have us and Will Wheaton and Adam Savage. Yes, they were all.
And we were not.
We were not.
Therefore.
Which illustrates exactly why it's difficult for us to do Woodstocks is, you know, damn it, we're all successful to varying degrees. Some of us incredibly successful.
What do we need to sabotage some of?
Sabotage might help. But no, we are working on, since it's hard to create all these separate dates everywhere in the travel, of doing a Super Wootstock Festival majigger.
Which I am lobbying to have called Wootstock Stock.
But that it would actually be like a 2 to 3 day festival that would be just like a real music festival. But with all the
seconded
things. Awesome. Then we'll do it.
We were just waiting on your approval.
Thank you.
In fact, we are actively now working towards making that happen, hopefully in later 2012, maybe?
Yeah, we'll do it at a time that does not conflict with the other nerd majors like Dragon Con. There's actually a poll up on paulandstorm.com, Wootstock.net, where you can voice your opinion as to where it should be, who should be involved, if it should have panels, etc. Thank you. That was an excellent question that allowed us to pimp our thing.
Oh, and speaking of pimping, before we forget, because we always forget.
Yes, we do.
We do.
Joko Cruise Crazy 2. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're very close to a fluffernutter there, man.
No, genuine Don't. Enthusiasm.
No, that's fine.
No,
that's a warning.
No.
It's like a Shirley Jackson story in here. Joko Cruise Crazy 2 is happening February 19th of 2012. Tickets are still on sale. It's going to be even more awesome than the first one, and the first one was pretty awesome, I don't mind telling you. So there's that.
Dragon Con with fewer costumes and more fruity drinks.
On a boat.
There will be plenty of references time on boat. I might even go so far as to say too many. Let's see. No, I don't like that question. Oh, there's one back there. Better be a good question. Or there will be shaming.
I was introduced to all of y'all through like World of Warcraft fan videos.
Yeah.
Do y'all ever watch them?
She's saying sure.
They are epic.
She's saying y'all were in the South. Why? She's from like New Hampshire or something.
We even got an all y'all.
Are you from the South? We want to know before we answer.
I am very from the South.
I think they're remarkable. I don't even understand. I don't even understand how they are made.
Well, it's a world, and there's lots of Warcraft involved.
Oh, that I get. That I get. I don't actually play the game, and I feel like what's amazing to me about those videos is there are clearly a bunch of in-jokes happening that are meant for however many hundreds of thousands of people, and I have no idea what they are talking about, you know, which is great. It just goes to show you, like, the remarkable sort of underground niche-y nature of some of these nerd things. But it's very hard to call them underground when so many people are into them. And it's, I don't know, it's just very exciting to me.
Just
because
the lamestream media isn't covering them.
Well, exactly.
I think underground niche nerd things is the front runner for the podcast title.
Yeah, I think that's tonight's episode. Yes, in the middle over here.
Segueing off of what you were just saying, I was very pleased to hear NPR's Planet Money do a podcast on you, Jonathan. But
here we go. All right.
It's five. Bye-bye, everyone.
I will say that I was disappointed with the attitude of their music editors that sort of threw that niche label back on you and sort of was very, seemed very wedded to the major market, major label paradigm. And I was just wondering if you'd vented as much as you wished to on that or if you would regale us a bit more and Paul's going to get your opinions on how does it scale? You know, that's one of the questions that they were saying that it might not scale. And I know they touched on that a bit and wondering how your recent experiences might.
Well, you know, I feel like I've said my piece on that. But to fill you guys in, they did this story on the Planet Money podcast about me, and they brought in some people from their from one of their music blogs to sort of bounce off Alex Bloomberg's story about basically how my business works, you know, outside of a traditional record label. And I mean, which in many ways has become kind of an old story, not just for me, but for tons of people. You know, over the last 5 years, it's pretty clear what has happened in the music industry. So I don't know. And for some reason, the music bloggers were sort of like, oh, well, you know, sure, that works for songs about monkeys work for Jonathan Coulton, but not everybody can get famous writing songs about monkeys, which is kind of a strange thing to say. I mean, and also is not, you know, nobody's saying that everybody can get famous writing songs about monkeys. Maybe somebody is, but that person is a fool. I don't know. My takeaway from that is that, I mean, you know, a couple of things. First of all, and this goes back to what I was just saying before about the World of Warcraft thing, to call, the term geek and the term niche have become increasingly meaningless over the last few years. And, like, when does something stop being niche and start being mainstream? It has nothing to do with numbers, apparently. You look at the video game niche, which is enormous! And, people still don't think of it as the same kind of massive pop culture phenomenon that, say, Hollywood movies are. So I just think that's a very interesting kind of cultural blindness that we all have. Obviously that will change. Well, I don't know. I was going to say obviously it will change, but I don't know if that's entirely true. And my other takeaway is that, you know, it's kind of become a boring thing to talk about because for me it's so painfully obvious now that people in all sorts of media are making things independently and reaching their audience directly. And, like, that's the future. And it's here with us now. And it's an amazing gift for all of us. In many ways, to talk about that as any kind of interesting story is, I mean, it's a very, very 2002 kind of...
Wake kind up, of Grandpa.
Yeah, I know. Like, here it is. You know, here's 1,000 examples of this happening.
Yeah, you no longer need a huge machine behind you to produce and distribute and find your audience.
Yeah, that was the takeaway I really wish that they had concentrated more on. I mean, the bloggers, their main point was, well, you know, show me how I can become incredibly successful writing a song about monkeys on the internet. And that's not really the point. The point was, this is now a much more viable business model that it wasn't 5 years ago. You know, Storm and I are not ridiculously famous the way you are, Mr. Still Alive, but we make a living at what we do, and it's thanks to this model, and I wish they had looked at that in more detail, because that's where the story is.
Right. Yeah, do something good that other people might like, and it can get out there, and then you will be president. Because that's next. For Jonathan.
Would we rule as a two-headed president, like Paul and Storm as like one entity, as like vice president, and with Jonathan Coulton as our president, or wow. Hodgman as Dick Cheney?
I think Hodgman as Dick Cheney will happen regardless of the scenario,
and that's now the front runner for the title of this episode.
Hodgman as Dick Cheney. Was there another question, or is it time?
Is there
wrap?
One more really good question? We have time for maybe one more question, if there is one. Is it a good one? Frog Hat Man?
Yes, the hand is still up, so we're going to go with it. Do we have other business, regular podcast business?
Well, just mentioning, again, like any of you in the room don't already know, tonight, Variety Playhouse, 8:30 p.m. Tomorrow night, 8:30 p.m. in Marriott Atrium. We'll be selling our stuff on Sunday in the Marriott at our merchy places. Oh, also a quick addition. Storm and I are now, we're not listed as such in the listing, but we're going to be joining Will Wheaton on Monday morning at 10 for his panel, which he refuses to acknowledge is called Wesley Crusher Boy Genius.
In which I'll be playing Wesley Crusher and Paul will be playing the Boy Genius. Question.
So you've got access to a time machine and a malicious, mischievous streak a mile wide. And you're watching Supernatural, Leverage, whatever, and you decide, I could tie somebody up and leave them in a closet and take their place like they always do. Oh, management sent me down. Who in history do you replace?
Not Abe Lincoln.
Too soon, yes.
Oh, gosh.
Ooh, tough one.
Let's hit pause for a second.
Now, can it be real or fictional?
Sure.
Well, how can it be fictional?
Because it's time travel.
Oh.
Right. I'm going with the doctor.
We'll go to fictional times.
The doctor. He can go anywhere, does cool stuff, has two hearts.
Nathan Hale, because he was very brave and patriotic. I'm just kidding.
I would.
I hate that guy.
I would replace Robert Moses because he ruled New York with an iron fist for decades.
So right, and you've been trying to do that for a while.
I have.
Yeah.
That's not a particularly funny answer, though.
It's funny to me.
It's funny to Storm. That was just one for Storm.
Because I know who he is.
Go read the book Gotham, ladies and gentlemen. That joke will become incredibly funny.
And the power broker.
So that being said, any other pimping to do? Artificial Heart on the internets now.
Yeah, go to jonathancolton.com to find out about that. Go to paulandstorm.com, listeners, in order to find out where we're going to be, what we're going to do, what's it all about, Alfie. And other than that...
Oh, hold on. I got the music playing. Hold on. Come on, play music.
Yeah. Right, this is a podcast.
Come on, music. Oh, it starts out soft here. Let's fast forward to a louder part.
Other than that, I'm Storm.
And I'm Paul.
And I'm Jonathan Colton.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Nerds be crazy.
Go do things.